My name's Bonnie Dadig. I'm a physician assistant, and the person that helped do the study with me is Jenny Carrillo. And she and I started out on a journey. I think that many of us, you wonder where you get to. I was trying to develop a cultural competency section in my program and a medical Spanish course. And Jenny was the woman who taught Spanish for our program for approximately now 6 years. During that process, I found out about the national standards for culturally and linguistically appropriate services, and it was something that I wasn't aware of as a health provider. I was in clinic once a week along with my teaching responsibilities, but I didn't even realize that these existed. And then through teaching the course, I learned about use of interpreters, and since I had that much ignorance as a program director and a healthcare provider, we decided to look at and study our university, and so that's the reason why we started this study. So things in Georgia really had changed, and that's why we had decided to add medical Spanish to our curriculum, because the Hispanic demographics in both the country and our state have been changing, and then trying to determine how people really understood about class, and then we'll talk about the project and then future directions that we're going with at the Medical College of Georgia. So when you look at the population as a whole, we have the United States about 10%, and then you look at how it changes with states. The most largest populations are, again, in places like New Mexico, California, Texas, Arizona, Nevada, Colorado. And I had originally been from Colorado, and that was an area of interest when I used to work at that state. And then when you look at, again, this is from the 2000 census, the change in the population of Hispanic and Latino residents between 1990 and 2000, then Georgia does jump up much higher in this list of with the percent change. And I was going through some of the poster presentations, and the La Raza group have just determined, too, in 2004 that, again, Georgia has one of the, again, highest growth factors, and many of our population is undocumented, and many are very poor and very young, and so there's even a growing need for this kind of training in my with other health professionals. So, for many of you, probably were more aware than I was, but in 2000, President William Clinton released an executive order to improve access to services for persons with limited English proficiency, or LEP is the terminology. And the Office of Minority Health at the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services created 14 standards on culturally and linguistically appropriate services for healthcare in December of 2001. When I went through the booths and stuff, I stopped at one of the HRSA booths and talked to a gentleman who's now too starting a new program, overview in the Health Resources and Service Administration's health literacy training. It's going to be an online service that deals with many of these same issues from LEP and health literacy, as well as cultural competence. And he was one of the group that actually drafted the class standards. So it's a very small world when you start looking at it. But of the 14 nationally recommended standards, they're basically to inform, guide, and facilitate implementation of class. So the first three themes are 1 through 3 is culturally competent care. Then the 4 through 7 are language access services. And the final 8 through 14 are organizational supports for cultural competency. And in different studies, there's many, many studies. This is just one that looked at academic training and training in emergency department positions in Spanish language. and cultural competency. And in that study, it's clear that patients who are Spanish-speaking, when they deal with someone that speaks their language or, again, uses interpreters appropriately, are much more pleased with the type of services they receive from that facility. And so our objectives of our study was to determine the level of familiarity of faculty and students at our college with the national standards, and to identify faculty and students' interests in preferred method of learning about medical Spanish and class, and to determine if they have an aptitude for working with medical interpreters. And so the survey was designed as looking at the interpreters and willingness and to learn to Spanish, and then prior experiences learning language. And we again focused just on Spanish, since this was the fastest growing language in Georgia that was non-English. And the survey was basically a Likert scale, and because it's the easiest to answer the questions, and the quicker the survey, usually the more participation you get. We use something that the university is using, a software program called 145 that helps structure curriculum and other things. And it did affect how people answered our survey. The medical school have used this tool for approximately about 3 or 4 years. Many of the allied health sciences and other departments in schools hadn't used it as much, and I think it affected with our response rate. We first used my own students as a pilot to see what problems we were having in the survey, and then the survey was administered to all MCG faculty and students from the School of Allied Health Science, Nursing, Dentistry, and Medicine. And the total response rate was low. We had 29% from the faculty and 44% from the students. And again, the medical students make up about 43% of the total MCG student population, but accounted for 70% of the student responses. But again, I think that was because they were familiar with this software. They had to do all their evaluations and course evaluations and clinical rotation placements using this software. So that's one of the reasons that sort of skewed, I think, their use of the survey. And so we had about a little more than 10% in the School of Allied Health Sciences. Dentistry doesn't use this software, and so again, they had a low response rate. The graduate students, there's a smaller percentage of students on our campus. Again, medicine, again, we had the 60% of the faculty, and then 70% of the students responding, and then nursing, again, doesn't use the software as much, but it has a school that's much larger, so expected more response. Now, first area that we looked at is how familiar they were with the national standards, and again, most students answered that they were just some, we had 20% that said that they were somewhat familiar, both faculty and students. And then the faculty, what was interesting, was less familiar of the ones that responded than the students. And that sort of mimicked what I think I felt myself as a faculty member. And then there was very familiar. So again, people did know about these standards for dealing with these patients. Then another area we looked at is, what would a student be interested in spending time learning Spanish? Now, one of the things, in all professional schools, they are so demanding that it's, we were trying to see how realistic it would be to develop courses that would not just hit my PA students, but other students, and then trying to share resources. We were looking at developing a course for the entire campus instead of just my program. And so when you look at that, there's still quite a few students and faculty that that did not really feel they were negatively or neutral toward taking the time to learn Spanish. But we were pleased to see that when you looked at either agree or strongly agree, that's about 60% of this, the faculty and a little bit more of that of the students. And one of the things, too, several student groups, the medical students have a once-a-month clinic at inner-city group that deals just purely with Spanish-speaking population. My students also have a health promotion disease prevention clinic at a soup kitchen. And so the students on campus have been somewhat more active than the faculty on developing some of these, and they showed that they were interested in learning Spanish to deal with these populations. And then ability. Again, Georgia, this has been a dramatic change, and I think people are seeing more patients that they can't communicate. And as a health provider, it's very frustrating not to be able to speak to your patients. And so we weren't surprised to see that most, now here we're like 75%, 80% had very low skills in speaking Spanish. Then we had a little bit more on the medium, and very few people had a high rate of ability in Spanish speaking. And then we asked, how would you like to learn? Now, one of the things, again, I was excited about seeing this health resources and service new program about health literacy training. It's already, it'll be launched soon, and it's a 4 to 5 hour web-based course that people can register for, and many of the, even my Academy of Physician Assistants is supporting that, and many other professional organizations. We have a human resources department that does a lot of training on campus for both faculty and staff, and so we put that down as a source of training. We had a lot of, you know, sort of mid-range, but 45% of faculty and 30% of the students were interested in a web-based course, and then another group didn't know how they'd like to learn that. Now, the limitations of our study is that it had a limited number of faculty answering the questionnaire, and I think it was more because they weren't used to this software, and then the depth of the questions were fairly brief. Again, I think sometimes when you have open-ended questions, you can get more data. It's hard to do. Then there was no partitioning between, for my school, whether that's dental hygiene or other things. So at a school level, we couldn't approach, you know, targeting our own school well. And people always look at what kind of legal obligations do I own, do I have to these non-speaking patients that affect the quality of care I offer them. And like, this is one of a study that one, excuse me, just commentary that there was a huge verdict. A doc in the box kind of area had seen a patient who just spoke Spanish, and then they delayed care because they couldn't communicate with him, and then lost a lot of his vision after he came in later. And if someone had spoke Spanish, that probably would not have happened. And so in many probably academic centers, there's many faculty and students that are interested in learning medical Spanish. Again, I think all of us need to know about the mandatory aspects of the class standards. And I think certainly like this population here at the American Public Health Association, we're very, it's very important priority that we have cultural and linguistic competency. And so I think that it'll be much better healthcare provided to people that when this is, these standards are addressed. Thanks.